Paul Harris Show on the Big 550 KTRS. If you've listened to me over the years, you've heard me speak to my next guest several times. Her name is Lenore Skenazy. She runs a website called Free Range Kids, in which she evangelizes to stop making your kids have their day so structured. Let them go outside. Let them play. Let them make up their own rules for a game. Otherwise, as she writes in a new piece that she wrote with Jonathan Haidt that's on Reason.com today, we're raising a too fragile generation of children. Lenore, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you, Paul. I'm happy to be here.
What do you mean that we're making a too fragile generation of kids?
Well, if you've noticed, there are weird things happening on campus lately where students say that they feel unsafe in situations that are literally safe, but there's somebody coming to campus that they don't like who's going to speak, or they feel like there have been discussions around them that they don't agree with, or arguments swirling. And the thing that interests me the most is, why do they use the word unsafe? Why do they feel literally like they are fragile when they're not? And so Jonathan Haidt and I started looking backwards and thinking, is it possible that because we're bringing up kids, telling them that almost nothing is safe, and it's not just parents. I mean, there are laws, there are norms, there are some examples I give in the Reason article. One was of a teenage boy who was chopping some wood, some already downed wood on a prairie path. Some branches, and some lady came along and said, "What are you doing?" He said, "Oh, I want to make a fort for my friends." And she called 911, and the police came, and they took away his axe and gave it to his parents because that just wasn't safe. And another example I give is of a daycare center in a kind of distressed part of Charlotte, North Carolina, got some gently used playground equipment, but the children weren't allowed to play on it because it was sitting on the grass and not on wood chips, and it just wasn't, you know, according to the rules, according to the safety regulations, it's not safe for children to play on equipment on grass. It has to be on the wood chips. And then the third example I gave is of a Parents Magazine article where a mom asked, my kid's old enough to stay at home alone for a little while when I go and run an errand, but now she has a play date over. Can I still run my errand?" And the magazine said, "Oh, no, absolutely not. You want to be there if there's a squabble. You want to be able to intervene." And to me, that just showed how little we are allowing our kids to do, and any time that they might be able to do something independently or happily or normally, we're telling them it's unsafe. It's unsafe to chop wood if you're a teenager. It's unsafe to play on the swings if you're a toddler. It's unsafe to have an argument with a friend if you're a tween, because somehow you can't handle any of those. So the theory that we have is that when kids are told that nothing is safe enough, they end up believing us, and they get so used to us intervening and saying, "Oh, is that not comfortable?" or "Oh, is something upsetting you?" or "Oh, watch out, that looks hot," that when they get to college and there's nobody saying those things, they don't understand how they're supposed to cope with these miseries of, you know, disagreeing with people or hearing that people are coming to campus that they don't admire,
yeah,
or that in fact they dislike. So are they actually fragile, or have we just told them that everything is too much for them and they've started believing us? That's our theory.
I think it's been years, perhaps decades, of treating them like this that has made them too fragile. And that third example you gave of, you know, two girls playing at home, maybe they have a disagreement over something. Work it out.
Yeah.
Why does mom have to come in and say, "Okay, well, you go over here and play with this, and you go over here and play with it"? Just let the two kids work it out, unless they're beating on each other.
Right.
You know, now you got a dangerous situation. But you say another thing in this piece about when kids don't get to go outside and make up games,
right,
that they make up their own rules for, then as they move through life, they don't know how to do that in their own situations.
Right. Well, you know, there's a drive to play. I mean, what do kids love doing most? They love playing. And why did Mother Nature put that drive into kids that they will do things that are difficult? They have to, you know, if you're playing, you have to wait your turn. And if you're playing, sometimes you have to climb something that's a little high and you're a little scared. And sometimes you're frustrated. Sometimes you're angry. But you work it out, and because you're desperate to play. And I think Mother Nature put that desperation in so that we would get used to arguing with our friends and working it out so,
yeah,
we could keep playing. trying and used to doing things that are a little beyond our ability level or our comfort level, so that we get used to taking like tiny risks and dealing with a little bit of uncertainty and a little bit of frustration. And when we take regular old-fashioned free play out of kids' lives and we replace it with something like Little League, which I'm fine with Little League, but it's not play. In Little League, the adults are deciding what game you're playing and who's on which team and whether the ball is in or out and when the game starts and when the game ends. And all those things are not left to the kids anymore. And so you've taken out the opportunities that they need to learn all these social skills, to learn how to make a team that's not overwhelmingly great facing a team that's overwhelmingly terrible, because nobody will be happy playing. So there's... in our desire to give kids something very safe, which is a supervised, structured activity that looks like it's playing, right? There's still a ball involved. What we've done is basically created school all day long. They go to school during the day, and somebody tells them what to do. And then afterwards, they're at Little League, and somebody else who's an adult is telling them what to do. And what they're not learning is the give and take of actually making something happen and dealing with some consequences. And it's possible that without that opportunity, those skills don't develop.
Here's the sad thing about this, Lenore. If my daughter came home from school and I said, and she said to me, can I go outside and play? Mm-hmm. Or I encouraged her to go outside and play, as you and I did after school when we were kids. Mm-hmm. There would be no kids for her to play with. I drive through, I live in suburbia. I don't know what it's like in urban America, but I live in suburbia in our subdivision. I can drive through there at 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the evening, and there's no kids outside. We don't have a Good Humor truck come through our neighborhood anymore because there are no kids.
So interesting. Yeah, so... So the article in Reason was announcing this new nonprofit that I've begun with John Haidt and with a couple of other people called Let Grow. And one of the things we're trying to do is get schools to offer free play after school. Now, it's not going to be exactly like me and you going to the park, but it's as close an approximation as I can think of that we could get underway these days. So after school, there's still a bunch of kids around, right? So you have the most basic ingredient of playing, which is other kids and all different ages.
Yep.
And then it's a safe enough place that the parents don't freak out, right? The parents who might not be willing to send their kids to the park anymore, even though it is very safe outside, they will let their kids stay after school. And so if we could just have, you know, a swath of 3 hours from 3 to 6 in the afternoon, kids are allowed to play in whether it's the gym or the playground, and there's an adult on premises who's sort of like a lifeguard, you know, lifeguard doesn't get in and organize the games or tell you how to swim. They're just watching to make sure everything's okay. So you have an adult there with an EpiPen in case of any problems, but then the kids have to come up with something to do, make the teams, organize each other, be creative, try something a different way. You know, you can't play things weird if you're in Little League. You have to play it exactly as the rules are done. And so when you give them back this chance of free play, they're not in the forest, they're not making a fort, but they can do almost every other part of free play that's so important and get those skills, those interpersonal skills, those social skills, those basic adult skills that they're going to need when they're in college and beyond, learning to deal with each other.
And no parents allowed.
No parents allowed, correct.
When did we become this country? This way of treating children as, you know, they might break if something... If I looked away for 8 seconds, my child might explode?
You know, I'm not sure. I know that certainly the 80s played a role in that. That's when we started putting the pictures of the missing kids on the milk cartons, and we made it seem as if they're all being snatched off their bikes, when in fact most of them were runaways or children taken in custody disputes between divorced parents. So that was something. But the thing that irks me very much is that the media treats every tragedy as if there was a lesson to be learned. And the lesson is always, see, if only you were glommed to your child 24/7, nothing terrible would ever happen. And if something terrible does happen and you weren't glommed onto your kid, it's all your fault.
Right.
And that's been terrifying to parents because, first of all, the media finds the worst stories from around the world, 7 billion people, and shows them to us. But also there's very little sympathy for parents anymore where something goes wrong. It's always, well, why wasn't she with him, and why wasn't she watching hard enough, and why did he ever let her do this? And so the parents are worried that something terrible will happen because that's all they see on TV, and they're also worried that they'll be blamed and that they think their new role, according to the media, according to the moralizing, is that they must be God. They must be literally omnipresent and omniscient, watching everything their child does, eats, says, wears, walks to, licks, meets, greets, hears. Otherwise, they're not being safe enough. And so when that's the message that parents get, I don't blame them for helicoptering because they're literally told if they're not helicoptering, they're putting their kids in danger. So part of it is the media. Part of it is we live in a litigious culture, and we start thinking of everything through the lens of risk, and a capitalist culture tries to sell us things. They have to make us afraid for our kids, and then they can sell us something to make us a little less afraid. But really, it's this drumbeat that if you're not supervising 24/7, your child is in danger, and it's all your fault.
Yeah, that afraid part, I think, is an even bigger part than you just said, because I think it's part of the great American fear-mongering industry, where we have to be afraid of everything all the time, even though, as you and I have discussed, I mean, we just went through Halloween, and yet again this year, no kids were killed by razor blades in their candy. In fact, no kid ever has. You know,
kid has ever been poisoned by a stranger's candy. Absolutely true.
Right.
Once in a while, there are pins and stuff, but I think there would be no pins in any Milky Ways ever if we didn't talk about it incessantly,
right?
And constantly print warnings and don't eat a bite of your candy before you get home. And parents, be sure to thoroughly inspect and throw out anything that isn't stamped from the factory.
I know, but it's not just that. It's the fear mongering about you should be afraid that your kid's going to be kidnapped. That's another reason we can't let the kids go outside. Some stranger in a van is going to offer them candy, and it may not be poison, but he's going to take my daughter or son away. That doesn't happen, isn't it? Is it true that we have the lowest number of child abductions now that we've had in generations?
Yes, we are at the crime rate now of 1963, and I live in New York City, where I was just reading that we are about to have a historic low in murders. But let me tell you, if you have like 2 minutes, I'll just tell you a story that was on the news that somebody sent to me. It was from earlier this no, it was from last week. Sorry. In a small town in Oregon, I can't remember the name of it, but it starts out with the two anchors, you know, man and a woman saying, next, a story that will teach, that has a lesson for us all about stranger danger.
Ugh.
And what happened? In fact, there was a guy who had a cake who drove by two 10-year-olds who were playing, and he said, hey, kids, here, and he gave them the cake, and he drove off. That was the sum total of their interaction. So the kid says, brings it to a mom. The mom calls the police come, and suddenly it is this giant story about stranger danger. Well, the police, the chief of police who's interviewed on the show says clearly this was a case of either poisoning or grooming. Grooming as in, creating willing victims for some kind of predator.
Yep.
But they tested the cake and there was nothing wrong with it. It had been expired. You know, it was a couple days old. It was an Oreo cake from like Costco. And there was no grooming going on. The guy just drove by, gave him a cake, and somebody wrote in the comments, the locals' food pantries are getting a lot of extra cakes and desserts that they can't use. And this guy probably either worked at one of the pantries, or even got stuff from one of the pantries and shared it with a kid. So there was literally nothing that this told us about stranger danger, except that there was a stranger and he did not pose a danger. But the entire tone of the piece on television was that this was an incident of stranger danger, and then they talked to the mom who said, well, I was thinking of giving them more unsupervised time, but now, the reporter goes, a complete cake from a complete stranger.
Ugh.
As if just saying it that way proves that something horrible was going on.
Well, it could have been worse, Lenore. It could have been a slice of cake from a slice of a stranger.
Yeah, that would have been worse.
And by the way, I love the fact that the police chief was sure that poisoning was involved, a conclusion he jumped to before the cake was tested.
Right, right, right. And also, you know, most people don't know how to poison a cake, you know, and then make it look exactly like a cake from Costco down to the bubble over it and the little stamp and the date. And it was just, it's to me, what's frightening is the fact that we can take a non-event or even a nice event. You know, I think this guy probably thought he was doing something nice. He had this cake. It was expired. Look, kids, they love cake. Let me give it to them.
Yep.
And turn it into more evidence of why you should never let your kids go outside alone. You wonder, how did we get to this point? We have this steady drumbeat that you must, you know, that kids outside are in danger. And if the facts don't fit the circumstances, the reality, well, we'll just make it sound like they do. And we'll turn this nice man into a nefarious stranger who was trying to either rape or poison two boys.
Lenore Skenazy is the founder of the book and blog of Free Range Kids and president of the new nonprofit Let Grow Foundation and a semi-regular guest on this show. It's always a pleasure, Lenore. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Paul. So fun.